brought to you by the Cannabis Bee Network.
Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Scott Jacobs.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 074, 421-2014. Hope you all had a happy 420 yesterday. There's a lot of things going on everywhere. All right, let's roll into article number one. Marijuana tourism booms in Colorado, though officials remain skeptical. Take it away.
Marijuana tourism booms in Colorado, though officials remain skeptical. By John Ingold and Jason Blevins. Source, The Denver Post. Marla Cooley isn't exactly being discreet when she advertises the marijuana friendliness of her vacation rental home near Lyons. She calls the rental high in the hills. I'm in a spot where I can enjoy life at its highest, and I'm welcoming people to share the experience up here, said Cooley, who hopes to expand with extra cabins for guests. I'm an entrepreneur. There's opportunity here. This is the new world of Colorado marijuana tourism, where the past year's winks and nods have been replaced increasingly by an open embrace of cannabis-seeking vacationers. Lodging choices, especially at bed and breakfasts or independent rentals, have opened up for toking tourists. Marijuana tour operators say their businesses are booming. Pot shops report are being packed on Friday. This is a common scene during the High Times Cannabis Cup at Denver Mart on Saturday. Event organizers are expecting 37,000 people to attend the two-day cup in Denver. Seth McConnell, The Denver Post. And advocates say this weekend surrounding the April 20th marijuana holiday known as 420 is poised to reveal just how much out-of-state interest has been generated by marijuana legalization in Colorado. The largest 420th celebration in Denver history will feature dozens of concerts, conventions, trade shows, product launches and symposiums around the city, capped by the now familiar April 20th smokeout in Civic Center. J.J. Walker, one of the owners of the marijuana tourism company My420 Tours, likened it to a pop-centric version of the wildly popular South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas. Besides the DNC Democratic National Convention, I can picture anything bigger that people have really all come together for, Walker said. It's going to be massive. The amount of money coming into town this weekend is astronomical. The city's tourism establishment, meanwhile, remains skeptical of the event's impact and the interest in marijuana vacationing. At Denver International Airport, a spokesman says passenger traffic was expected to be about average through the weekend, with Thursday and Friday the heaviest days. Rich Grant, a spokesman for Visit Denver, said hotel rooms are still widely available downtown and at good rates. You are not seeing compression like you would if there was a major convention, Grant said. You see some of these articles touting these huge numbers, and we just have no idea if any of that's true. Here's one of those numbers, 80,000. It's the record number of people that organizer Miguel Lopez expects at this year's 420th rally in Civic Center, although tracking attendance at such free events is difficult. Not only has his event this year expanded to 2 days, it will for the first time include street closures around the park, security checks at entry points and an amped-up musical lineup that includes Wyclef Jean and rapper B.O.B. Lopez said he hopes to use the rally's newly elevated profile to continue advocating for the rally's original purpose, changing anti-marijuana laws. We have a strong political course and direction, he said. Marijuana-linked businesses, though, also see a marketing opportunity in the rally, which will feature dozens of vendor booths and a big tent sponsored by My420 Tours. It's that kind of commercial ambition that most worries critics of Colorado's marijuana system, who have likened the growth of the marijuana industry to the rise of big tobacco. Increase in youth marijuana use and addiction, as well as concerns over stone driving and unsafe product packaging, are all driven by the same kind of commercialization that attracts marijuana tourists, they say. This is something that's not working, said Ben Court, with the Center for Dependency, Addiction and Rehabilitation. And it's not working because of the level of commercialization. Graham McBain, owner of the marijuana tourism company So Mile High, said investment opportunities lure some marijuana tourists who want to get an inside look at the industry before they put down money. But he said people wanting to have a good time, such as a recent bachelor party of seven guys from New York who McBain estimates spent $2,000 among them at recreational marijuana stores, also make up a sizable chunk. This year, McBain is even offering a $38,000 for two people signature tour, which combines a private jet, fine dining, spa treatments and a luxury hotel room. For most marijuana tourists, though, lodging remains the biggest challenge. Grant, from Visit Denver, said he knows of no hotels in Denver allowing people to smoke pot in their rooms. My 420 Tour says it negotiated with its downtown hotel to allow tourists to use marijuana vaporizers in their rooms, but Walker wouldn't name the hotel. Instead, McBean said the best option appears to be bed and breakfasts or through private rental services online such as Airbnb.com or VRBO.com. There are people who want to come here, and it's something they want to do and they need a safe place where they can do it, said Denise Murray, who promotes her vacation rental home in Manitou Springs with a private outdoor space for smoking. Murray said she noted a marijuana-friendly space in her online ad so people didn't have to be furtive. She's not putting blunts on pillows, but there's a shop down the street and everyone is welcome to partake or not in her wooded enclave. The proliferation of marijuana tourism, though, has given others on the rental sites more reason to be cautious with the guests they select. Several 5RBO.com renters explicitly and in caps lock style note zero tolerance for all types of smoking, including marijuana, in their online ads. An owner in Denver who had advertised her rental as having a marijuana-friendly outdoor space said she has decided to go completely non-smoking after a guest sparked up in the living room. Another Denver owner said she will be removing her rental home from VRBO.com this summer over fears that she can't keep it smoke-free. Our problem is that we don't have any tools to protect our property from inappropriate things, said owner Michelle Price, who said she isn't against legal marijuana. I don't have a lot of answers. But we are seeing a lot of interest since January from groups we've never seen before.
Article number 2, 420 Movement Grows Up. Take it away.
420th Movement Grows Up. By Robert Mangelsdorf. Source, We Vancouver. A hazy blue cloud hangs over the third floor of the Cannabis Culture headquarters on the so-called Pop Block on West Hastings Street, as dozens of staff and volunteers go about their business. The office is home to the Cannabis Culture magazine office, the online Pop TV studio, and the BC Marijuana Party headquarters. While the yellowed newspaper clippings and psychedelic posters adorning the walls give the office the look, feel, and smell of a campus radio station, this is ground zero for a revolution. Founded by pot activist and entrepreneur Mark Emery in 1994, the Cannabis Culture Empire has been at the forefront of the movement to legalize marijuana, for recreational, as well as medicinal uses, for the past 20 years. It was just across the street at Victory Square where the first 420 marijuana rally was held back in 1995. We've seen a lot of changes since then, says Mark's wife, activist and former BC Green Party candidate for Vancouver West End Jody Emery. 20 years ago, you couldn't even buy a bong. We've taken enormous strides in that time. This Sunday marks the 19th annual 420 marijuana rally, which is expected to attract close to 13,000 people to the Vancouver Art Gallery who plant smoke up in unison at 4:20 p.m. This is a celebration of cannabis culture and a protest against prohibition, says Jody. While the 420 rally got its start in Vancouver, the concept of 420 was inspired by a group of high school students in the 1970s in California who would meet up to smoke pot every day at 4:20 p.m. The term 420 soon became ubiquitous as code for marijuana use among the deadhead culture associated with the rock band The Grateful Dead. Mark Emery and his supporters took the concept a step further with the inaugural 420 rally on April 20, 1995. By having hundreds of people smoke pot in public at the same time, the police would be unable to arrest them all. To our knowledge, no one was doing anything on April 20th for 420 before our first rally, says Jody. In the past decade, the event has spread south of the border thanks to the internet. YouTube videos of the annual Vancouver event have reached a new audience in the U.S., Jody notes, resulting in 420 events cropping up in recent years. With extensive renovations planned for the Vancouver Art Gallery, this year's rally will likely be the last to take place there. Jody also hopes it will be the last 420 rally for which her husband will be absent. The so-called Prince of Pot is currently serving a 5-year sentence in a U.S. federal prison in Mississippi for selling marijuana seeds. He's expected to be released in July with time off for good behavior. While Mark Emery's jail sentence has made him a martyr for the marijuana movement, it's been left to Jody to step up as a spokesperson and organizer for the cause. In the past year, the legalization movement has gained considerable momentum thanks in no small part to Mark and Jody Emery's ongoing efforts. The U.S. states of Washington and Colorado have legalized the recreational use of marijuana, and a handful of other states are currently considering similar measures. The public is listening, and part of the reason is because the message is no longer coming from the long-haired hippies, but from the suits. We had to partner with the capitalists, says Jody. That's why Mark is always in his business suit, so people take him seriously. Last year, Jody ran for MLA under the BC Green Party banner in Vancouver West End in an attempt to bring the issue of drug law reform from the fringes into the mainstream. Jody has also shown she is willing to partner with anyone who shares her view that marijuana prohibition does more harm than good, including the man who put her husband in jail. In 2012, former U.S. Attorney and card-carrying Republican John McKay, the man who successfully prosecuted and extradited Mark Emery for selling marijuana seeds, spoke out against the damage wrought by marijuana prohibition. Jody Emery was by his side. "This is what these laws do," she says. "I don't blame John for what he did. He didn't have a choice. But bad laws force good people to do bad things." McKay was a sponsor of the bill to legalize marijuana in Washington, which he has stated he believes will reduce crime and increase tax revenue. In Colorado, taxes generated from legal marijuana topped $3.5 million in January, are estimated to generate up to $70 million annually. Washington expects $2 billion in the next 5 years. However, while the U.S. has been moving towards legalization, Jody says she's disappointed to see Canada going in the opposite direction. In the early 2000s, Canada was seen as a place where legalization was possible, says Jody. In 2001, Health Canada allowed access to marijuana for medical purposes. Twice the federal Liberal government tried and failed to pass legislation to decriminalize possession of small amounts for personal use, first in 2002, and then again in 2004. Then Stephen Harper got elected and they said they wanted to target the culture of cannabis, and that was scary, says Jody. For us, that meant more than just a crackdown with police, it meant ideas, and music, art, symbolism, tradition, and religion were being targeted. Legal tools like mandatory minimum sentencing and asset forfeiture have targeted marijuana users unfairly, she contends. It's costing taxpayers millions and it's tearing families apart, Jody Emery says. Including her own. I'm one of the lucky ones, she says. I've been spoiled with support. But there are so many more families that have suffered, that have kids that have to grow up with a single parent. As long as the Conservatives hold power in Parliament, she says Canada won't be able to move forward with drug law reform. Then we will see change, the way it should be.
Article number 3. Tens of thousands celebrate marijuana holiday across the U.S. Take it away.
Tens of thousands celebrate marijuana holiday across U.S. Source, Associated Press. Tens of thousands of revelers raised joints, pipes and vaporizer devices to the sky Sunday at a central Denver park in a defiant toast to the April 20th pot holiday, a once underground celebration that stepped into the mainstream and the first state in the nation to legalize recreational marijuana. The 4:20 p.m. smokeout in the shadow of the Colorado Capitol was the capstone of an Easter weekend dedicated to cannabis in states across the country. Although it is still against the law to publicly smoke marijuana in Colorado, police only reported 63 citations or arrests on Sunday, 47 for marijuana consumption. It feels good not to be persecuted anymore, said Joe Garamone, exultantly smoking a joint while his three-year-old daughter played on a vast lawn crowded with fellow smokers. The Garamone family came from Hawaii, among the tens of thousands who crowded into various cannabis-themed extravaganzas, from a marijuana industry expo called the Cannabis Cup at a trade center north of downtown to 420-themed concerts at the legendary Red Rocks Amphitheater. Acts included Slightly Stupid and Snoop Dogg. At 4:20 p.m., an enormous plume of marijuana smoke wafted into the sky above downtown Denver's rapper B.O.B. belted out his song Strange Clouds, with a hook, "And all we do is light it up, all night all you see is strange clouds, strange clouds, strange clouds." The Civic Center Park event is the most visible sign of the pot holiday's transformation. It started as a defiant gathering of marijuana activists, but this year the event has an official city permit, is organized by an events management company and featured booths selling funnel cakes and Greek food next to kiosks hawking hemp lollipops and glass pipes. Gavin Belt, one of the organizers, said in a statement that the event is now a celebration of legal status for its use in Colorado and our launch of an exciting new experience for those attending. Denver is just one of many cities across the country where 420 marijuana celebrations were planned Sunday. In Trenton, NJ, speakers urged a crowd of about 150 gathered at the State House to push state and federal lawmakers to legalize or decriminalize marijuana and called on Governor Chris Christie to do what he can to help medical marijuana patients. Among those at the rally was Jawara McIntosh, the youngest son of noted reggae musician and pro-marijuana activist Peter Tosh. In San Francisco, thousands of revelers gathered at Golden Gate Park's Hippie Hill, which has become the go-to spot for the unsanctioned festival every year. City officials said they would be cracking down on illegal parking, camping, drug sales, underage drinking and open alcohol containers. Hippie Hill was covered in canopies as dozens of people sold pot-laced cookies, brownies and other items. Some vendors told the San Francisco Chronicle that sales were slow because so many people were peddling the treats. Officer Danielle Newman said at least 8 people face possible felony charges, but she didn't elaborate on the reasons for their arrests. In Washington, thousands celebrated in the only other state to legalize marijuana. Events included an event sponsored by Seattle's Dope magazine, with a $99 judge's pass available that included 10 marijuana samples. Back in Colorado, University of Colorado officials closed the Boulder campus to all but students, faculty and staff on Sunday to ensure number 420 celebrations were held. Spokesman Ryan Huff said the tactic was working, with no arrests reported Sunday. While the weekend was for celebrating, recent events have brought serious scrutiny to Colorado's experiment with legalizing marijuana. Denver police say a man ate marijuana-infused candy before shooting and killing his wife on Monday, an attack dispatchers heard during a 911 call the woman placed. Her death followed that of a college student who traveled from Wyoming to Colorado with friends for spring break, ate more than the recommended dose of a marijuana-laced cookie and jumped to his death from a hotel balcony in Denver. State lawmakers are debating how to increase safety regulations. Marijuana festivities got off to a slow start on Easter Sunday. But as the clock counted down to 4:20 and crowds surged into Civic Center Park, festival-goers noted the big changes from previous years: more merchandise and more police. Last year's rally was cut short by a shooting that wounded 3. All attendees this year had to pass through security screening, and a heavy police presence ringed the park. "I still feel a little like a teenager," Garamone said as he eyed police patrolling the park. Just as striking was the proliferation of merchandise, from cannabis-related gear and t-shirts to $9 roast turkey legs and $4 water bottles. "I can just imagine how much money is being made right now," said Tina Crockett, 34, of Wichita. The commercialism disappointed Bob Glisson, 27, who was attending his fourth 420th celebration in the park. "It's all about the money now," the Denver resident complained. Still, the scene was wonderfully surreal for Bud Long, 49, from Kalamazoo, Mitch, who recalled taking part in his first 420 protest in 1984. "Nationwide, it'll be decriminalized," he predicted on Saturday, the first day of the two-day festival, "and we'll be doing this in every state."
Article number 4, the 11 stupidest arguments against legalizing marijuana. Take it away.
The 11 stupidest arguments against legalizing marijuana. By Matt Ferner and Nick Ling. Source, The Huffington Post. Nearly 80 years ago, the feature film Reefer Madness hit theaters, projecting demonstrably false anti-marijuana propaganda all over the big screen. In today's era of legal medical and recreational cannabis, the tone of this movie is often mocked. But drug warriors are still employing many of the same hysterical arguments to prop up their campaign against weed. When it comes to public opinion, it's becoming clear that anti-pop crusaders are losing the battle. Recreational marijuana is for sale in Colorado, it's coming to Washington sometime soon, and a number of states have considered legalization measures this legislative session. In all, 20 states have passed laws allowing the medical or recreational use of marijuana, and with a majority of Americans now in favor of legal weed for the first time in U.S. history, the momentum is on marijuana's side. As more states move toward reforming pot laws, many anti-weed groups have clung to the same tired rhetoric, a decision that has only served to further marginalize them. Greater public acceptance and access to the drug mean that many of marijuana's stigmas, once accepted as fact, now appear increasingly out of touch with reality. While there may be more reasonable arguments to make when considering the issue of legal marijuana, these overused statements are not among them. 1. Marijuana is addictive. Like pretty much any substance or activity, for that matter, marijuana can be abused, and frequent use can lead to dependency. But if we're going to keep something illegal just because it has the potential to be addictive, we'll also have to reconsider our approaches to a number of other substances. Studies have found cannabis to be less addictive than nicotine, alcohol and even caffeine, according to research by one scientist at the National Institute on Drug Abuse. It's believed that somewhere between 4 and 9% of regular marijuana users are likely to develop dependency problems, and it's true that a good number of marijuana users later avail themselves of professional help. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration (SAMHSA) reported that 957,000 people aged 12 and over saw treatment for marijuana in 2012. But while drug warriors have touted this as evidence of a marijuana abuse epidemic, pop policy reformers have noted that the large majority of these patients have been referred by the criminal justice system, which has expanded options for treatment over jail time or other penalties. While it's a clear step up from imprisonment, many of the people who end up in treatment are still forced there for minor marijuana charges. Furthermore, not all abuse and dependency is created equal, as the authors of Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know put it. The authors point out that while some heavy marijuana users do experience symptoms of clinical dependency and feel discomfort or withdrawal when trying to quit, kicking a pot addiction doesn't lead to the same type of intense, dangerous physical and psychological pain that often accompanies alcohol, nicotine or heroin dependency. 2. It's as dangerous as heroin and LSD. Not many people may be willing to make this argument directly. Even President Barack Obama knows there isn't any reliable evidence to support it, but the Drug Enforcement Administration's classification of pot is based entirely upon this contention. Schedule I drugs like marijuana, LSD and heroin are the most dangerous drugs of all the drug schedules with potentially severe psychological or physical dependence, according to the DEA. They are also said to have no currently accepted medical use. Key anti-drug officials have been unwilling to budge on the supposed parallels between pot and these harder drugs. During congressional testimony in 2012, DEA Administrator Michelle Lenhart refused to answer a question about whether crack was more harmful than pot. In January, Michael Botticelli, the drug czar's chief deputy, ducked a question about whether meth or cocaine was more addictive than marijuana, leading Republican Earl Blumenauer Dior. To explain why these repeated denials and other inconsistencies in federal anti-drug policy only serve to undermine broader anti-drug efforts. Being unable to answer something clearly and definitively when there is unquestioned evidence to the contrary is why young people don't believe the propaganda, why they think marijuana is benign, Blumenauer said. If a professional like you can't answer clearly that meth is more dangerous than marijuana, which every kid on the street knows, which every parent knows, if you can't answer that, maybe that's why we're failing to educate people about the dangers. If the deputy director of the Office of Drug Policy can answer that question, how do you expect high school kids to take you seriously? 3. Pot is a gateway drug that will lead you to more dangerous substances. The claim that marijuana use will tip people toward other, harder substances has long been pushed by drug warriors, despite a lack of factual basis. The argument goes that because people often try harder drugs sometime after having tried pot, the user's experience with marijuana must have played a significant part in later experimentation. But in reading drug use statistics, or any statistics at all, it's important to remember that correlation does not equal causation. Just because users of heroin, cocaine or other hard drugs are very likely to have used marijuana earlier in their lives doesn't mean that the pot itself was the catalyst for their later drug-related decisions. As Maya Shalavitz writes at Time, Hell's Angels motorcycle gang members are probably 104 times more likely to have ridden a bicycle as a kid than those who don't become Hell's Angels, but that doesn't mean that riding a two-wheeler is a gateway to joining a motorcycle gang. It simply means that most people ride bikes and the kind of people who don't are highly unlikely to ever ride a motorcycle. It makes sense that statistics would show drug users frequently turning to pot first. Marijuana is relatively easy to lay hands on, meaning that anybody with a desire to alter their state of mind with the substance can likely access it, though if this is the actual standard bearer of a gateway drug, as some would argue, then studies have also shown alcohol to be the true gateway substance. Studies have pointed out this flaw in the gateway theory since as early back as the late 1990s, though the failure to find a direct link hasn't stopped anti-drug crusaders from pushing the argument. 4. You smoke marijuana like tobacco, so it must be just as bad for you. Cigarettes lead to nearly 500,000 American deaths each year, so it might seem natural to assume that marijuana smoke drawn into the lungs in the same fashion would also do some serious physiological harm. But science hasn't borne out this hypothesis. Studies have found that cannabis and tobacco smoke contain some of the same carcinogens, but cigarettes, which contain nicotine, cause significantly more harm than marijuana, which contains cannabinoids. While many marijuana smokers may report respiratory discomfort like coughing or wheezing after excessive pot use, an extensive study released in 2012 found that the drug itself does not impair lung function. Other studies have found that cannabis can even suppress a variety of aggressive cancer cells. If medical science has reached any real conclusion about marijuana, It's simply that more research should be done to pin down the exact effects of cannabis smoke and cannabinoids. And while smoking is the most common way to use marijuana, there are also other methods of delivery that allow users to minimize or avoid potential harm to the lungs, ingesting high-potency cannabis-infused edibles or using a vaporizer, which eliminates much of the heated marijuana smoke, are a few of the most common alternatives. 5. Pop can make you go insane. In Reefer Madness, teens are driven to murder, sexual assault and insanity after indulging in pot. TV host Nancy Grey still thinks marijuana users shoot each other, stab each other, strangle each other and kill whole families, and that such behavior is all pot's fault. While it's established that psychotic people are more likely to have used drugs, and most commonly cannabis, before the onset of a disease, research has shown that smoking pot simply leads to an earlier onset of psychosis by an average of 2.7 years in people already prone to the condition. Other research suggests that marijuana emphatically does not cause psychosis, and past research has not been able to definitively rule out the possibility that people who are prone to developing mental illnesses like schizophrenia may simply be more likely to turn to drugs like marijuana. Furthermore, other research suggests that another cannabis compound, cannabidiol, may negate some symptoms of psychosis. Studies have also shown that changes in the brain due to marijuana use are likely reversible and that the legalization of medical marijuana may reduce suicide rates. While no substance is completely harmless, marijuana, in many studies, has been shown to be relatively safe. But again, until a larger wealth of research is completed in all of these areas, which will likely only be done after further legalization, we are left without more concrete conclusions. 6. Marijuana leads to criminal behavior. While some studies have indicated higher marijuana use among criminal offenders, that doesn't mean it's the pot itself that leads users to a life of crime. In fact, dozens of studies on the issue show that a causal relationship between marijuana use and crime has not been found. When it comes to violent crime, alcohol is a much more significant factor than marijuana. A report from the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism suggests that 25-30% of violent crimes are linked to alcohol use. A 2003 article from the journal Addictive Behaviors noted that alcohol is clearly the drug with the most evidence to support a direct intoxication-violence relationship, and that cannabis reduces likelihood of violence during intoxication. The National Academy of Sciences even found that in chronic marijuana users, THC causes a decrease in aggressive and violent behavior. Although there is little evidence that marijuana use increases the likelihood of criminal behavior, marijuana convictions are definitely likely to ruin lives and expose people to a life of crime behind bars. State laws differ, but in some places, possessing just one marijuana joint can be punishable by up to a year in prison and a $10,000 fine. Marijuana convictions also appear to be racially biased. A recent ACLU report, which tracked marijuana arrests by race and county in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, found that black people are nearly four times more likely to be arrested for possession of marijuana than white people. 7. It makes you lazy and unsuccessful. Marijuana opponents often point to studies suggesting that long-term use could result in a lack of motivation and a life of bumming around in your mom's basement. A Marijuana Policy Project study, listing 50 of some of the most successful people in the world who have admitted to using pot, completely shatters this mythology. President Obama, John Stewart and billionaire George Soros can hardly be characterized as lazy or unproductive. Anti-drug groups have also argued that marijuana nullifies the traits required to be a successful athlete. That's probably news to a lot of football players. Despite a league policy that bans the substance, one former player has said that something like half of all NFL players smoke pot either for medical or recreational reasons. Professional football is one of the most demanding and competitive sports in the world. Players probably aren't high while competing, but the fact that some turn to pot during their free time underscores the point that it's possible to achieve a balance between one's professional life and one's recreational marijuana use. 8. Legalization will cause mass zombification. While the threat of a zombie apocalypse is one of the internet's favorite fantasies, some anti-legalization opponents use it as a metaphor for their unsubstantiated fears of a lazy pothead nation developing in the wake of legal weed. Putting aside the fact that the link between marijuana use and habitual laziness is tenuous at best, multiple studies suggest that the decriminalization of marijuana has little to no effect on consumption rates. And prohibition has been woefully ineffective at deterring use. Fear of arrest, fear of imprisonment, the cost of cannabis or its availability do not appear to exert much effect on the prevalence of cannabis use, says one frequently cited study on marijuana prohibition. 9. I tried it once and didn't like it. So you don't like marijuana? Or you tried it once but didn't inhale. Or maybe you smoked a lot of pot a while ago, but now can't get off the couch while you're high, so you don't anymore. That's fine, the drug affects people differently, and anybody with knowledge of marijuana is well aware that highs vary greatly. But should your personal opposition to pot really require us to uphold a status quo of prohibition that results in one marijuana arrest every 40 seconds in the U.S., cost the nation between $10 billion and $40 billion a year and deprive state and federal governments the tremendous revenue generated from taxes on legal weed? 10. People don't even use it at weddings, so obviously it's more harmful than beer. This is an odd one. Earlier this year, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker R. pulled out this wedding scenario while claiming that it's a big jump between having a beer and smoking pot. If I'm at a wedding reception here and somebody has a drink or two, most people wouldn't say they're wasted, Walker said, according to the Capital Times. Most folks with marijuana wouldn't be sitting around a wedding reception smoking marijuana. Walker appears to be employing some serious circular reasoning here, claiming that weed, which is illegal, obviously, is less socially acceptable than alcohol, which is, he seems to be saying, one reason it should remain illegal. Walker has said that there's a huge difference between marijuana and alcohol, and the governor is right. Most studies show that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol. In 2010, for example, there were approximately 189,000 emergency room visits by people under 21 for injuries and other conditions linked to alcohol, including accidental poisoning. While there have been reports of people being treated at the hospital due to discomfort after using too much marijuana, these are far outweighed by the number of alcohol poisoning incidents. To this day, aside from one recent, unprecedented and widely contested conclusion about a cannabis-related death in the United Kingdom, there have been no reported deaths due to marijuana overdose in at least 10,000 years of human consumption. On the other hand, just 10 times the recommended serving of alcohol can lead to death, a recreational drug study from American scientists found. By contrast, a marijuana smoker would have to consume 20,000 to 40,000 times the amount of THC in a joint in order to be at risk of dying, according to a 1988 ruling from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. 11. But don't you care about the children? Yes, which is why it's important to understand that when it comes to marijuana, drug warriors are lying to them and causing more harm than good. Lawmakers have recently argued that the anti-drug crowd is losing the faith of teens because they pummel them with blanket statements instead of offering factual explanations about marijuana use and how to approach the drug responsibly. There are admittedly legitimate questions and concerns about adolescent marijuana use, including hotly debated claims about the effects of the drug on teens' mental health. And the fact that marijuana studies so often show conflicting findings is a sign of how much more research is needed in this area and how important those answers are. No one needs to encourage anybody, teenage or otherwise, to use marijuana. But if the drug warriors are to be taken seriously, they need to retire these shoehorn arguments and update their playbook for a new century.
Article number 5. Cannabis versus Hemp. Take it away.
Cannabis versus Hemp. By Heather Tillman. Source, Guardian LV. Many people are confused when it comes to the difference between what is, hemp versus what is, cannabis. Cannabis contains 5 to 10% THC tetrahydrocannabinoids, whereas hemp only contains 0.3 to 1.5%. Cannabis uses only the leaves and it is used for smoking or medical use. Hemp uses the stalk and seeds to make soap, paper, food, building material, and even plastics. The fibers in marijuana is not strong and breaks very easily. It cannot be used. Hemp fiber is the strongest natural fiber used today. Since the 1950s, hemp has been long confused with marijuana. It has long been a myth that hemp can get you high, which is not true. It would take a dozen hemp cigarettes smoked very quickly to come close to getting you high. Hemp also provides as much as 4 times as much fiber as just one tree. Also, with hemp you do not have to use pesticides, chemicals, or herbicides. If hemp is grown in rotation with crops like corn, it can be completely self-sustainable on its own. Hemp paper can be recycled 7 times, unlike pine paper, which can only be recycled 3 times. The seed and seed oil are high in amino acids, proteins, and essential fatty acids. Also, for those who support going green, the hemp ethanol burns very clean. Growing hemp has been linked as far back as 10,000 years ago. Places like China, Ukraine, India, England and more still grow hemp today. Until this past century, hemp was the largest crop in the world. Cannabis' first recorded use of medicine was as 2737 BC in China. Cannabis use was also recorded in 300 BC Jerusalem that a woman during child labor used it for medical purposes. Another interesting fact is the first Bible was printed on hemp. It was even used in the building of the pyramids in Egypt. Most people do not know that the first drafts of the American independence was written on hemp paper. Hemp fiber lost its value around the 20th century as hemp is harder to get off of the stalk and cotton was easier. Hemp is also used to make clothes. It is not only more breathable, but 3 times stronger than cotton. From 1850 to 1915, cannabis was used in the U.S. and could be purchased in the pharmacies and local general stores. In 1910 is when the Harrison Act was put into effect. This law states that marijuana, among other drugs, are a crime. Most people assume hemp and marijuana is the same thing when in fact it is not. Remember, hemp uses the stalks and cannabis uses the flowery part of the plant only. Hemp is grown different from cannabis. Hemp is grown up because its focus is on the stalks, whereas marijuana is grown out because its focus is on the leaves. Although hemp is legal to grow, it requires a special license from the DEA, which is rarely given. Not only is a special license required, but it has to be heavily guarded. This does not seem to make sense since hemp has little to no THC. Cannabis versus hemp is sure to be a controversial topic for years to come.
All right, listeners, that's all I have for this episode. Till next episode, have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your mind. Now, go pollinate the world.